You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and beauty, where relevant topics are discussed, where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight's show, we're talking about situations, life situations, that women and men have to go through that a lot of times we really don't talk about. We don't talk about it because we have these problems with ourselves. We create it because of our inner critic that places doubt in our mind. It places judgment on us. It tells us that we're wrong. It tells us that we were bad. It tells us that we did something wrong. We didn't live up to what we were supposed to do, and therefore we are not good enough. And I think it's interesting because a lot of times we think about the situation when it comes to various things, maybe not getting that job promotion or maybe not getting in that specific social circle that we wanted to. But in actuality, this connects to everything in life. And sometimes these situations that we deal with can feel earth-shattering. And I think it's interesting because, you know, men go through it, women go through it, but one of the things that women go through that we don't really talk about a lot is the concept of having a miscarriage. And I know that that sounds interesting to people, but if you think about it, we really don't talk about it. And, you know, I think a lot of the reason why we don't talk about it is because a miscarriage, having one of those, it seems like it's against nature. It seems like, how could that happen, being that a woman is designed, created the DNA to have a child? Like, why can't she have a kid? Like, this is what a woman's supposed to be able to do. It doesn't make any sense. And I think that's what really hammers home to women that deal with having a miscarriage, that they feel like they're not good enough. They're not even a woman. A woman can have a child. That's why I'm here. And I think that's what we really want to talk about tonight. But before we go really deep into that, I really want to talk more about self-doubt and how this really plays a big part. Bill, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, Ashley. And, you know, I mean, this is a pretty serious food for thought tonight. And I think, first of all, I'm painfully aware I'm the only male in the studio tonight. It's just that's just one of those topics. And you're right. I mean, we don't talk about things like that. And I think especially for males, it's like you don't know what to say, you don't know what to do, and so from my perspective, there's an element of self doubt there. So I'm going to be really interested in what you have to say about that tonight.
That's interesting you said that, because yeah, you're right. It's a female thing, but for all men out there that have been married to a woman or live with a woman that had a miscarriage, they know that it's almost like they felt like their hands were tied. There's nothing they could say or do to make that person wake up and stop beating themselves up, you know, long enough.
Well, and you, I think you hit it on the head a while ago. I mean, you know, for me, that's against nature. You know, something's happening and there's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing for me to fix.
Right.
And I can, you know, knock on wood, that's never happened to me. I've never been in that situation before, but I can only imagine just how thoroughly frustrated I would be.
Yeah, because you feel like, my God, I'm over here, you know, this woman is the love of my life, or she was carrying my child, and it didn't work, you know, but you're trying to give as much encouragement as you can, and sadly enough, she's not going to take any of it, because all she can hear is how bad she is, how bad person she is.
Yeah.
And her internal inner critic is so loud that everything you say is just noise. It's just noise. And it's almost like when you try to build somebody up, when their inner critic is so loud, what happens is at first they just kind of reject you because you're noise, but then later on they start looking at you like you're full of crap. Like you really are full of crap.
How can you possibly understand, you know, what I'm feeling right now?
Well, also, yeah. How can you even say that about me, because I couldn't even have a child?
Okay, right.
Like,
okay.
You're over there trying to tell me how great I am, but apparently I couldn't even bring this child to term. So I don't really understand what you're trying to say to me. I don't really understand the smoke that you're trying to blow up my butt. I really don't get it right now. And I think that's where a lot of times it comes from. And you're right. I see the other point you're talking about is outside friends and family saying, hey, it's going to be okay. And a lot of time in that situation, you're just like, you have no idea how I feel. You know, I've lost this in my life.
Right.
I don't know how to get it back. I don't understand how to deal with it. And you're over there telling me that everything has a reason. And I think that's interesting, too, because a lot of times in life, when bad things happen to people that we like or people in general, we don't know what to say.
Right. It's because the situation is so awkward and so uncomfortable. You feel the need to say something, but you just don't know what it is. And I think our in that situation, our normal filter, you know, the filter between the brain and the mouth, for some reason isn't there. And what you end up saying can a lot of times make it even worse. You don't intend for it to.
Well, yeah, you want to try to say something profound.
This is my favorite one. Well, you know, sweetheart, you know, God has a plan for all of us. And you just have to trust in destiny.
It's true. It's true.
Or trust in karma, or trust in, you know, whatever. And I've never been in that situation, but I can only imagine that that would be the worst thing you'd want to say.
Well, you know, and the thing is that to a degree, that comment, for the most part, is true. But it's got to be said at a time period that's acceptable. You know, it's kind of like when we do something that's crazy, and he maybe almost died doing something crazy, you know, jumping off a plane or doing something. Like, you're not going to laugh about that situation until, like, at least a few months out.
At minimum,
you're not laughing about it right then going, we almost died, man. You remember that?
Right, yeah.
That was crazy.
Over beers at the bar, yeah.
No, it might take a little while to get to that level. And it's the same thing with people dealing with grief. You know, and I think it's interesting. I really want to talk about this concept of the inner critic. And we've talked about this before on other shows. And if you want to listen more about how to figure out if you have an inner critic, where your inner critic is, and what your inner critic looks like, check us out on Spreaker or iTunes. We recently did a show that I really gave you the entire tips and tricks on how to deal with your inner critic and how to silence your inner critic. Because your inner critic's been with you for a long time. It's part of you. Okay, it's your judge, your jury, and your executioner. It's your accuser. You're accusing you of the wrong things that you've done, right? And so in that situation, we make judgment on everything we do, good, bad, and different. And a lot of times, and all the time, the inner critic is always looking at everything that you've done bad, poorly. Everything that Bill's done poorly, everything that Ashley's done poorly, everything that everybody's done poorly. And it's interesting because we live our life with this chatter, this constant chatter of the things that we weren't able to put together, the things we weren't able to do, the things that didn't come to fruition, the things that we wanted to make better on, the things that we thought we could do well. And a lot of times with this judgment, we stop trying. And that's where I think a lot of depression comes from, is once we agree to this judgment call, it's like having, you know, like this ugly Judge Judy hanging out with you. You know, once you agree to this judgment call, you're down for the count. You're in prison. You create your own prison, right? You lay, and your prison is your bed, and you lay in that bed, or your prison is your house, and you don't want to open the curtains because you don't want to deal with it because you agree that this prison is your life. Because the judge, they already handed down the, you know, the duly designated, you know, power of authority to you. You know, what are you still standing here for? You know, go back and lay in bed. Go get depressed, you know, because that's all you're going to do anyway. And I think the thing is to be able to understand when that inner critic is actually at work. When is that little cobbler in there making shoes? You know, at what point in time are they in there? I mean, you can hear it. And it all begins with this particular chatter. And it all starts with the concept of doubt. If I want somebody to question themselves, what do? I put a couple of, you know, ounces of doubt in their mind. Works perfect.
And just a little bit of doubt apparently is all that's needed.
Goes a long way.
A little dab will do you.
Oh, yeah, that's all you need. It's just a little tidbit of doubt of, can you do it? Will you do it? Will it work? Will it not work? You know, I mean, that's all the concept right there. And it's interesting how we all think about the haters outside of ourselves, but really, we have a hater inside of ourselves. I mean, we have the one and only hater. We have the only one that matters to us because it knows how to hit us, how to take us down, how to move us out. It knows how to literally take the wind out of our sail. And the funny thing is, we allow them to take the power. We allow it. And a lot of times people at our age, because we're in our, you know, we're in your 30s. By the time you're in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s, you stop hearing that voice. You stop hearing the chatter. It's almost like white noise. Like you don't know that it's actually happening. You don't know that there's actually a voice within you that's telling you that you're no good. And you stop hearing the you're no good thing, Instead, you just hear this white noise and you act upon what the inner critic is saying, but you're subconsciously acting upon it. Okay, so what I mean is this. So you're no longer hearing the words like you're no good or you're never going to amount to anything or whatever. You're not hearing any of that. All you're hearing is kind of this chatter that you're not paying any attention to. It's going by so fast that you just think that your mind's on overdrive and I can't sleep or I seem not to be able to end this chatter, but I have no idea what it's talking to me about. But that chatter right there is telling you how bad you are. And you subconsciously do things to basically to screw yourself up. For example, we might overdrink. We might overeat. We might take medication to self-medicate ourselves.
Well, and that's the key, right? I mean, since you don't want to feel this way, you do things in order to not feel that way. So you self-medicate either with food or medication or alcohol or drugs. Here's one, you know, in context of women tonight, shopping. You know, Ashley, I mean, don't some women, you know, do like, you know...
Retail therapy.
Yeah, retail therapy. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, let's go shopping. Yeah, retail therapy is a good thing. You know, buy a bunch of stuff and make yourself feel better about yourself. You know, maybe that might help. But a lot of women go into really extreme debt. A lot of people go into debt, men and women, go into extreme debt based on retail therapy to try to, I don't know, fill that void, to make themselves feel better. That's one of those things. So when we return, we're going to be talking to Jane Herring, a friend of mine, also a writer for the Huffington Post, a writer for Real Posh Mom, and a writer for also for my website, and a friend. And she's recently gone through a miscarriage of twins, of two girl twins, got to about the 4.5 month mark, and found out that one of them was medically, could not medically be saved. And it was very painful, and she had not told people that she was pregnant because she had gone through a previous miscarriage. And I think this is something that needs to be brought to light. I think women all around the United States, all around the world, needs to realize that other women have gone through this. They've dealt with it. You're not alone. And you're not a bad person just because you couldn't bring those child to term. You're not a bad person. It's not about you. It was going to happen. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim up bar. Glass of perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live with Perspectives, and I am your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight we've been talking about that inner critic. We've been talking about the doubt that the inner critic helps provide to us that we can think about all the time, about how it does hold us back from our goals and dreams, and how it also places immediate judgment. And we instantaneously begin to beat ourselves up. I mean, you know, a battle is difficult when you're battling yourself. And I think life has a lot of different currents and a lot of different events that really get to us. And as men, there are certain events that are just very difficult to tackle. It's things that they thought that they could deal with on their own. They don't understand why. They were built certainly biologically to do certain things. Why do certain things happen? On the flip side, women, in the same respect, we're built certain ways, we have certain DNA, we're supposed to be able to carry through on certain situations, and it seems that sometimes either our body fails us, but a lot of times we feel like we failed ourselves. And I'd like to talk about that tonight. I think there's a big situation in life that a lot of people don't talk about, and it's when women actually have miscarriages. When women go through the process of a miscarriage, having a child that's been in your body for months and months at a time, waiting for that child to become a part of your real life, in living, breathing terms, you know, being able to see that child get to 21, be able to see that child going all the way through elementary school, middle school, high school, doing all that stuff in your head before the child is created, and then something goes wrong. And I don't think we hear enough about that. So tonight, I wanted to bring on a friend of mine and somebody I look highly upon, Jane Herring. Jane's written for the Huffington Post, as well as Real Posh Mom, as well as actually she's written on my website as well, too. And I'm really proud of her. Jane, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ashley. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm glad to have you here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So we were talking the other day, and that's what really spawned the idea of this show, is that you recently went through a situation, a miscarriage, in November of last year.
That's correct.
And it was twins, right?
It was, and it was actually the second pregnancy I'd lost in a year, so it's three babies now in 1 year.
Wow. The first time, how hard was that to deal with?
It was really difficult. I had carried a child to term 6 years ago. My daughter is a happy, healthy baby. It was the most perfect pregnancy. As my doctor said at the time, it was a boring pregnancy, which is what you want. Doctors like boring. And so I went into this this pregnancy, the first one last year, thinking that it was going to be just like that. And so everyone kept saying, well, don't get too excited yet. Things go wrong. And I thought, well, not with me. You know, my body's great. My body is built for this. I can do this. And I had all of the symptoms for 3 months. I was very sick, very tired. But there was that joy that this was all for a really good reason. And so when I went into for my 3 month checkup and didn't see a heartbeat, it was a really harsh blow. The one that happened this past November was very different in that at about 13, 14 weeks, we knew something was wrong. And then we spent another 2-3 weeks seeing specialists, having different procedures done, and then knowing that it could happen again. And then what it did, it was, I thought it would be less devastating, and it was more so because my body had failed me yet again.
Well, I mean, that's big time. I mean, I think anybody listening tonight, I know everybody can understand this. If you either had a wife that's gone through a miscarriage or a relative, but also, you know, the husband, too, is trying to help. The father of the child doesn't know what to say. But let's go back to this concept. So there you are. You've done everything you can. There was a chance of doing some sort of experimental surgery that doesn't come to fruition in time. What were the first thoughts that you had when you realize, when you leave the hospital and you go home, what were your first thoughts?
At what point?
Right after the miscarriage, right after they said, this isn't going to work, this child has this condition, and basically has what, killed the twin?
Mm-hmm.
What was going through your head at that time?
I was going through my mind everything that I had done, every choice I had made during the pregnancy, prior to the pregnancy, that could have possibly caused what had happened, regardless of the fact that my doctors, all of them, all the specialists said, you didn't do this. You didn't cause this. We knew it wasn't genetic. We knew that it wasn't my body. We knew that this was just something that happens. And that's hard to hear because you don't hear about it very often. So it's really hard to wrap your mind around that. People aren't talking about these miscarriages. So the idea that it just happens doesn't make sense. I couldn't accept that. So I didn't listen to my doctors and I went home, and I'm still months later wondering, you know what, maybe it was that bite of sushi I had before I knew I was pregnant, you know. And I actually believe that you can have most sushi while you're pregnant, but I did that. Maybe I should have eaten organic the entire time. What did I do wrong? And in talking to many other women who have gone through the same situation, it's a common theme.
It really is. I mean, I actually remember back to my mom. We talked about this a lot. I was born with a condition that nobody understood, and it took years and years and years for people to figure it out, and 180 people have it in the world and all that good stuff. So it was very hard to figure out for most of these doctors. My mother said that she kept asking herself the same question. What had she done wrong? What had she taken? Was there a medication that she took that could have caused this to happen? And I didn't realize that she had been personally beating herself up about that for the good part of the first 8 years of my life. And we didn't have this come to Jesus conversation until I was probably in middle school. And she told me, you know, I just don't understand what led to this. And it wasn't until way later on, once it was diagnosed, that she was told that this was just a glitch. It happens, it's only happened 180 times in the world. Like, it's not like something that you did. It wasn't something you took. It wasn't the food you ate. It wasn't a pill you took. It wasn't any of that. It wasn't you. But there's this part of a woman that wants to take the stand that maybe it was something I could have done different. Maybe it was something I could have done better. Completely second-guessing, doubting oneself in a situation that seems that there is no doubt.
Yeah, it's your mind automatically goes there. You know, I will not accept that this was something that was out of my control, because it happened in my body. In my body that is supposed to create a life, give it the best possible outcome, best possible options, and create something new. And when it doesn't happen, well, how can that not be my fault? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And that's something that's so interesting about the situation. And that's why I wanted you to come on tonight to talk about this, because I know a lot of people are secretly going through pain, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you've even talked about that too, that isn't it true that you were actually helping, you were actually getting some comments and some emails from lots of women that were dealing with the same situation and they'd never spoken about it?
It was really overwhelming. I wrote down my story as a way of my therapy. And it was only going to be for me, but I needed to write. And I wrote about it for my personal blog that really only friends know about. My editor at Real Posh Mom asked if she could print it. So she did. And I've actually been reached out by several other publications, online publications, to reprint it. And I've given them that permission because the response was overwhelming. And people that I'd never met before, ever, and never knew, and only found me through my writing, shared their stories and said, you know, I never told anybody, but, and they shared their stories. And then people that I have known my entire life did the same thing and told me their stories. And I'd known them and I had no idea what they had gone through. But in turn, by doing that and hearing everybody else's stories, it was incredibly healing for me and continues to be so.
It's interesting how you can know someone for years and you don't know this big piece of something that happened. Like, it's a puzzle piece. And it's interesting the things that we guard other people from knowing about us, which I mm-hmm. think is interesting. And a lot of those are based on the fact that we feel that we somehow are not contributed to the downfall. And I think that's interesting. I mean, what are some things that you heard from some of these moms or expecting moms that lost their child? What was the big underlying current that you felt? Was it fear? Was it anger?
It was all of that. Fear, anger, depression, obviously. But the anger was always at themselves, always. The most poignant message that I got was from somebody that I had actually grown up with. I've known her since first grade. I remember meeting her. We were never particularly close, but she had seen me share my story and she reached out and she said, she realized that after she had her miscarriage, she was punishing her body when she should have been treating her body like a friend in need. If any other friend, family member had been going through pain, had a difficult time doing something, you reach out, you try to help. When it's ourselves, we punish it. We punish our body, we punish ourselves, and we need to step outside of it and look at it as somebody who needs us. And that really turned me around. Very much so.
That's very insightful. You know, I'm big on the higher self. I'm bigger on understanding that there's somebody within us that is way bigger than us and just way more wise than us. And I always like to give the example of Amazon women, because I think that as a woman, we all have like a 12-foot woman that's inside of us that's saying, hey, come on, Jane, go this way. This is the right way. We're doing it. This is right. Don't second guess yourself. Don't doubt yourself. Things are going to happen, but the best things are going to happen. The right things are going to happen. And sometimes it's hard in this human life with all the media and with everything that we have around us to say, to divide ourselves from what we think we're supposed to do and what we have to do versus maybe what we need to do. And I always wonder that, because you know how they always say that things always seem to work out. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes in the most painful and depressed states of mind, that comment can seem almost rude.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
I hated when people said, well, there's a plan for you and these babies are not in your plan. You know, I wanted to say some very nasty things back to those people. And it was not something I wanted to hear. Hearing that this was meant to happen, this was meant to be. No, that's not something that we want to hear when we're going through that. What was meant to be is that about this time I should be holding two babies. In my mind.
Exactly. And that's where I feel like a lot of people miss it. And I think some people are trying to do what they know, but words are only words, you know? And sometimes mm-hmm. I think people say some things that are just so abrasive. And I agree with you. I mean, you know, you in all righteousness, these two children would be here. Mm-hmm. When we return, we're going to be talking more about that concept, as well as the self-doubt, as well as being able to figure out how to overcome this, and some advice that Jane would give to everybody listening tonight on how to deal with the situation and how to come out the other side whole and happy. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight we're talking about the situations in life that come up, those things that We already have that internal critic. We already have the doubt. We already have the beat down. We already have the judgment call. We already have the regret. But what happens when you're in a situation that's way bigger than, let's say, getting that job? Let's say being able to move up in some sort of societal ranking. Let's say that it has to be about life or death. Let's say that it has to do with children, about your, you know, potential children. And let's talk about women in this situation, because I know that a lot of women aren't able to discuss having a miscarriage. It's not something that people talk about. And, you know, right when we were on break, we were actually discussing this. And I think it's interesting how a lot of women actually don't tell women and don't tell people in general that they're pregnant until they get to a certain trimester. And so I think that's an interesting situation. Jane Herring joins us tonight from the Huffington Post, from Real Posh Mom, also wrote with my website as well, which I'm pretty happy about. And she's here talking to us about the concept of dealing with the miscarriage and how to get through it to the other side. So Jane, I know you were telling me, and we're friends, and so I know that I didn't really know that you were pregnant until then. Do you think that that might be part of it, is that a lot of people don't know that you're actually going through this pregnancy at the time, and so when it happens, it almost feels foreign to try to discuss it with people?
Absolutely. You know, you wait, everybody waits until that three-month mark is usually the point where you start telling everybody about your happy news that you're expecting. And at that point, if the pregnancy has lasted that long, barring any kind of new development where they start developing badly or have certain conditions, you're usually in pretty good shape at that point. But if you get to that point like I did, so I waited secretly, sick and tired, but I had my little Pinterest boards ready to go, but they were the hidden ones, you know, preparing for the babies and maternity fashion and all this stuff. And I couldn't wait to make my announcement. And it was at that point that I found out that something was wrong. And so not only did I have to deal with the fact that I had another 2.5 weeks of trying to understand it and see if there's a possibility of fixing it, but I didn't have that support system in place because I hadn't told anybody I was even pregnant. And then what do I do? Do I call up a friend and say, hey, by the way, I'm pregnant, but I might lose them in the next 3 weeks? You know, that's just, it's that elation and that depression, and people don't handle that very well. There were a few instances where we met up with friends and you know, they could tell something was up, obviously. And I said, well, here's the situation. We are expecting. And you could see the look of joy and elation on their faces. And I had to stop them immediately and say, no, this is not something that's exciting. And here's why. And, you know, and then they go, oh, and they don't know what to say. Whereas if you had had somebody by your side, at least I had my spouse, who knew the whole process and that we were already there, it's a little bit easier. But a lot of women do not talk about their miscarriages because nobody in their lives even knew they were pregnant.
And, you know, I know that to be true because I have a lot of friends of mine, you know, that went through several pregnancies and some miscarriages as well, that they just never spoke about it till really about the 4 month. Because they knew that they were, you know, out of the woods, and they felt good about it. But you're right. I mean, I had a few friends that had miscarriages in the past, and I didn't really know what to say. But the one thing I knew was not to sound like I knew everything. I knew that because I had never tried to have a child, and so that's almost foreign to me to try to give somebody advice on something that I've never done. And coming from a therapist's point of view, that's just not something you do. Mm-hmm. It's more of understanding and letting that person share. But for the most part, I think most of society wants to tell you something because they want to believe the best in the situation. They want to hope that there is some sort of meaning behind everything. But at the same point in time, it would be nice just to get a hug sometimes. Mm-hmm. And just like, I don't really know what to say, but I love you. And I just don't think there's a lot of people out there that know that that's an option, that you can just say that. I really don't know what to say. I haven't been in that position. Instead of trying to tell you and a lot of the women out there that have gone through the situation, oh, it's going to be okay and everything's going to work out. And you're over there saying, you know, I just lost 2 heartbeats over here, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm over here trying to pick up the pieces of my life. And my husband doesn't know what to do because he's trying his best. But right now, I'm too busy beating up myself right now to listen to anything this guy's got to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's the position you were in, because when you feel that alone, people can say, you know, you're the rock star, you're the queen, you're this and that. And you're over there saying, yeah, I'm going to go sleep on the floor. I'll see you later. I've had enough.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And what you said is the best thing to say to somebody going through this is, I'm so sorry, and here's a hug. you know, just leave it at that. You know, you get a lot of well-meant advice. You don't want to hear it. Like you said, I was too busy beating myself up. And my husband was wonderful. He cared more about me and was worried about me. But until I could take care of myself and forgive myself, which seems unnecessary, but it's what I needed to do, nothing anyone said was going to make a difference.
That's true, because our inner critic is one of those voices that just talks and talks and chatters and talks and sometimes yells and screams. And a lot of times people don't realize it, too, how much our critic does talk to us and tell us exactly how bad we really are. You know, how we're not worth it, how things are just not working out because we're not a good enough person, how we don't deserve to be happy because we've done all this stuff in the past that's, so we're going to bring up the problems that we've created in the past, and they're not really that problematic. It's just like I've talked about this in previous shows, and if you get a chance, listen to us on Spreaker or on iTunes, but a lot of times I talk about how it's almost like having that drunk relative that talks the worst about you in front of everybody, and you're over there going, but I've grown up. I mean, I'm 30 years older than that, and I don't pee in the bed anymore, and that's not me, and I can't believe everybody's here to hear this, and you're just beating on me, and we do it way worse than in our own body.
Oh, if it was anybody else in my life telling me these things, oh, it was your fault, you did something wrong, I would cut that person out of my life. Why am I not doing that to that critic inside of me?
Exactly.
But we don't.
Exactly, and it's hard because a lot of times people don't see the difference between their critic and themselves. They think that that's themselves talking, when in actuality, it's this inner critic that is a form of our ego, which a lot of people confuse the ego with this thing that wants to make us all better and have, you know, big, you know, chests, you know, like the birds, how they push up their chests, you know, yeah, they puff up, you know, and it's like, look at me. Well, no, the ego is actually trying to take you down a notch every single second it gets. You're not good enough. You're not worthy enough. You're not educated enough. You're not a good enough mom. And I know there's a lot of mothers out there right now that might have not have gone through a miscarriage, but they question themselves on a daily basis if they're a good enough mom.
That is a huge problem. A huge problem when it comes to mothers. There was just recently a commercial that dealt with that very, very same issue of, you know, should we carry them on our bellies? Should we push them in a stroller? Should we breastfeed? Should we use formula? Should we use all organic? Should we stop them from sucking their thumb? And every mother makes a choice for what she believes is best for their children. But often that means that you disagree with what other mothers are doing for theirs. And instead of supporting each other and holding ourselves up and holding each other up, we're actually tearing each other down and adding to that inner critic on a daily basis.
Yeah, like, oh, no, I'm doing this. And this is what's right. No, not what you're doing. And you're right, because everybody has to do what they think is right. And you have that conscious being, you know, like I like to talk to the Amazon woman, and men have the same thing. It's not a woman. Yes, it's a man. But, you know, they have that same component. And you know consciously what you are supposed to do. You know, a lot of people call that your soul. A lot of people call that destiny. A lot of people call that your heart space, whatever. But the thing is that you know wholeheartedly what you need to do. And this critic likes to override that because it likes to get louder than your conscious is. I'm going to be as loud as I can. And it's almost like sitting at one of those restaurants where the sound and the decimal level is so high, you're trying to talk to the person across from you and you can't understand what they're saying. All you can hear is the guy next door to you saying, I need another Tom Collins. Where's my Tom Collins? I mean, come on. Can you just bring some ice and a pitcher over here?
Absolutely. You know, you're drowning out the most important voice, unfortunately, with all that negative stuff. And it's not good.
So let me ask you, because I know that a lot of people listening tonight, and I'm sure that a lot of people have been touched with the concept of a miscarriage, whether it was themselves or a sister or a relative of some sort, you know, whoever it could be. And I think that this touches the hearts of lots of people tonight. What are maybe one, two, or three concepts or ideas that you would tell moms or expectant moms or women that have gone through this, how to handle it, how to get to that other side, how to find that peace again?
I think the most important part is you need to find your therapy. And your therapy might be a therapist. It might be, like it was for me, writing, a creative outlet. It might be time in a support group with other mothers. It might be time with yourself. But it needs to be a healthy therapy. You know, it can't be, I'm going to fuel this depression with unhealthy activities. You really need to start taking care of yourself and your body. Like I said, you know, treat your body like a wounded friend who really needs help. And just start there. Do the things that make you happy. They're not going to make you happy for a while, but eventually they will. So that would be the first thing to do. Writing down my story was the best thing that I did. My therapist even said, you know, you don't need me. She was very impressed with doing that because I realized that that was going to help me more than any other choice. The other thing is that you have to be honest with yourself. Be honest, was it really your fault? You're going to keep telling yourself that it is, but it wasn't. And be honest with other people too. If you want to be private about it, that's fine. But with the people that really care about you, tell them what's going on. You'd never know if they're going to say, you know what? I went through it too. And you will open up a new relationship and a new level of friendship by understanding that about each other. And then the third thing is something that I did actually learn from my therapist that I went to go see after all this happened, which is accept that some things are an appropriate response. I really held it against myself that I was so, so sad. And when I went to go see her, she said, you know, why do you think you're not doing well? And I said, because I cry all the time. I'm really sad. And she said, yeah, of course you are. You just lost two babies. You had a miscarriage. You are allowed to be sad. That is an appropriate response. An inappropriate response is when you start doing things that are a danger to yourself, to other people, when it really gets to a point where you are not getting out of bed at all. And it's a really deep depression that needs to be handled another way. But crying, being sad, not wanting to look at babies, which happened to me. I didn't want to see anyone pregnant with a baby. And it seemed at the time that everybody on earth was pregnant or had a baby. You know, that's okay. You're going to go through that. And the people in your life that, you know, have a baby shower or something going on where you're going to be around that, they need to understand that, you know what, I'm not doing so good right now. I'm going to need to not go to that. And they'll understand.
Those are words to live by. I love that. And one of my favorites is, you know, just treat yourself and treat your body like a wounded friend. I mean, you know, not like an outcast. Jane, it was awesome having you on Perspectives tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. And I hope this has helped a lot of people. When we return, I'll be talking more about how to deal with the internal critic, how to deal with that doubt, and how to stop that judgment and that executioner from keep putting you down and putting you in some sort of depression. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here and give us your perspective. We're listening. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I am your host, Ashley Burgess. Wow, what a show tonight. You know, we've been talking about the whole concept of that inner critic, the self-doubt. You know, how to deal with this judgment, the labels and the expectations that are all painful that we put on ourselves on a daily basis. You know, Jane left us with the concept of treating your body like a wounded friend. You know, not to excommunicate yourself, but to actually love yourself, to show yourself gratitude, to take care of yourself. And I think a lot of times we don't do that. When something goes not our way, when we feel like life has given us, I don't know, a bad dealt of hand, we have a tendency of seeing it as our own problem, seeing as we've done it to ourselves. We're no good, and we're going to actually punish ourselves for what's happened. And the sad thing is that our body's taken a blow. In this situation with Jane with the miscarriage, it didn't make anything easier by her basically mistreating herself and not eating and not taking care of herself and probably going into a deep depression.
Punishing herself.
Definitely.
In other words.
For the things that happened that were out of her control.
And, you know, okay, you know, maybe intellectually, because my first reaction there was that, Jane, you know, it wasn't your fault. But we're not talking intellectually here, are we? You can't relate to it that way. So if you think about it, of course her first reaction is going to be to blame herself.
You know, it's true because, you know, back in the day with my mom, I mean, when I was younger, when I talked about this earlier, you know, when we didn't know what I had, we didn't understand my condition, and, you know, we went to specialist trying to figure it out. And I remember my mom finally looking at me one day saying, you know, it's something I've done. I've been trying to hide this from you, but I know that it's something I've done. I don't know if it was something I took. I don't know if it was a prescription that a doctor gave me. I don't know what it was. I didn't drink at all during the childbearing years. I didn't drink at all. I never smoked a cigarette, but I'm wondering if it's something I ate or something I took. And she goes, I have been worried about this since the day that we found out that something wasn't right. And I was like, you've been worried about this the whole time? And she's like, I have been, because it's something I've done. I had to have done something for this to happen. But you know what? It's wild that years later, It took specialist and specialist, chief of staff after chief of staff, to finally figure out what it was that I was diagnosed with. And a diagnosis that 180 people have in the world is not something that you did to your kid.
Right.
Okay, it just right. isn't. And she asked, she's like, is it something I took? Is it something I ate? And the doctor's like, no, not at all. It has nothing to do with that. It's a genetic glitch. It's a system. It's something that happens. And we can't exactly tell you how it happened, but we know that you didn't contribute to it. And the sad thing about a miscarriage is that you don't get this information. Like, you don't have the child live out, and then you figure it out, and you're like CSI, and you put it together, and you realize, okay, I didn't do anything wrong. Look, it was some sort of glitch. Well, no, in this situation, you take it all personally. There's something I did to kill this child. There's something that happened. I could have done something sooner. There's something I ate. And you heard Jane was talking about maybe it was something she ate. Maybe she ate sushi and she shouldn't have had sushi when she had a child and she thought it was okay. And yeah. It's like you could sit there and second guess yourself all day long.
Yeah, what if? I mean, until you just drive yourself crazy. Yeah.
What if it was the vitamin C that I took? What if it was the piece of chocolate I ate?
Yeah, maybe it's too much vitamin C or not enough vitamin C or, you know.
Where are you supposed to live in a bubble? You know, yeah. Not take, I mean, and that's the key. And it's like, I think that we as a race of humans have this tendency of placing judgment on ourselves, putting labels on ourselves, and putting expectations that we have to live up to that sometimes nobody could live up to, right? Yeah. Nobody has the ability to live up to
this ideal pedestal. Yeah.
Oh yeah, this icon.
Yeah.
This level of right. I am the best. And I think a lot of women out there, a lot of moms out there question themselves if they're a good enough mom. Am I a good enough parent? Do I raise my child right? Will my child turn out okay? Will the way that I raise them allow them to be okay? Will they turn out like good citizens? Will they turn out happy and healthy? Will they get married? Will they have children? Will they do well? And that's a lot of expectations to put on ourselves. And, you know, there's certain things that are outside of our realm of ability. And there's other things that just have to kind of coexist. And I think the inner critic is here to really allow that judgment. And I think if you really pipe into that and you allow that chatter to continue in your mind and to allow you to get off course like that, you're going to be in a position that's not a very healthy position. You're not going to be taking care of yourself very much.
And I think that, again, going back to the kind of the natural reaction here, it sounded to me like Jane, felt this need to punish herself. And that was the appropriate way in her mind, anyway, that she was punishing herself. And you really can't tell a woman in that position, you shouldn't do that to yourself. Well, I mean, again, kind of like what she was saying, there's certain things you just don't say to people in certain situations, and that's one of them. It just makes it worse.
Well, and the thing is too, it only really makes it worse when your inner critic is trying to be louder. Because you start fighting.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what it is. And sometimes people say the wrong things, okay? Let's just put it out there. Sometimes people say bonehead things because they don't know what to say.
Right.
And you can't expect people to say the right thing always in critical situations because, you know what? It just doesn't always happen. I agree with the fact that if you haven't had a miscarriage, you probably don't know what it feels like.
I was going to say, Ashley, I was painfully aware that I'm the only male in the studio tonight. Because, I even said this to Jane, during the break. It's like, of course, you and she know each other, but I just now met her. And so I said to her, I know I just met you, but I don't know what to say. I just want to give you a hug. And, she thought that was sweet, I guess. But
She really appreciated
but
that.
It's like there's just no possible way I can understand what she's going through.
And I think that's for a lot of people too, not only men, but also women. I mean, women that haven't gone through it, women that don't have kids, women that haven't gone through that. But I think the biggest thing that we have to really redirect this to is the concept that when we're busy beating ourselves up by our own judgment and our own labels and expectations created by our inner critic inside of us, when other people are trying to let us off the hook, when other people are trying to give us a life raft, we don't want to hear it. We don't want to take it. It's like we're already fixing the noose. We've already created the noose, and now we're going to jump into the noose and hang ourselves. And if you're over there trying to give me a step stool, you're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key. And this goes across the board for a lot of people with a lot of issues. We're not talking just about miscarriages here. We're not just talking about women's issues here. We're talking about all human issues here. There's a lot of things, especially people that are fighting diseases and cancer, that say, why can't I do this? Why can't I do this? Why me? Why can't I fight this? Why can't I win? And going through that same situation is you have to stop judging yourself, and you have to be, you have to stop being the judge, the jury, and the executioner. You got to sit there and say, you know what? My body and myself, I need to take care of myself.
Yes.
I need to love myself because I don't understand why this is happening to me. I just don't. But it happens. And it's not a personal thing. It's not that, oh, I've done something wrong. It's just, it's happening. And I think that's the same sense, the same sentiments as being. Instead of being happy or sad, or instead of something being good or bad, it's being. You got to be in the moment. And I know it's hard to critically allow this, especially when you're going through something painful. But the only way to heal yourself is to let go. You got to let go of the preconceived notions, the expectations, the labels, the judgment that we've created, and allow the sunshine to come through. And a lot of times this is based on being able to understand that chatter, being able to understand when that inner critic is out. And when they're out, they are literally doing anything they can to pick a battle. And that battle begins inside of you, and that's where the battleground is. And the sad thing is that people don't understand what you're going through if you don't tell them what you're going through. And if you're not telling somebody, hey, I'm beating myself up over right now, I really can't listen to that. That's the only thing you can put frame of reference into. And so I think that if we look at this situation and we understand it from a situation outside of kind of like a bird's eye view, that's what we have to do when we're in the situation. If you can somehow or not see yourself as the victim or as the bad person, but be able to look at it as if you were looking at it from another person's point of view. What if you were your friend? What if you were really your friend? Not you anymore, but your friend. What would your best friend do? Would your best friend beat you up for what you did? Would your best friend beat you up for what you apparently couldn't do as a woman? Or would your best friend give you a big hug and say, I'm here for you? And that's the same thing across the board if you're dealing with cancer or any sort of big issues in life, is that the only way you're going to get better, the only way you're going to heal yourself, is to show yourself love. You can't take away nutrition and love and happiness and all this stuff and think that that's going to give you a good environment to grow anything. It's not going to happen. It's only going to give you more sadness, more depression, more anger, and eventually hate. And that's the thing, is that you got to be your best friend. And if I stress anything right now, is to love yourself. And a lot of times we have to let go of these expectations, because you know what? When we expect ourselves to do things, we start putting those expectations on everybody around us, causing our family and friends a lot of grief, okay? Because people can't live up to all those expectations that you put down, because one, they don't even know you gave them these expectations. And two, sometimes these expectations are way higher than anybody can live up to. And guess what? You're doing that to yourself right now. And the reason why you put expectations on other people is because you do it for yourself. So you say, why can't I do it for them too? I'm doing it to myself. So honestly, I think if anything that Bill and I've talked about, and Jane, is that you have to really honestly understand yourself. You got to get rid of the labels. You got to get rid of the expectations, and you got to get rid of the judgment and replace that with care, with love, and with understanding. You know, you have to be there for yourself. If you were another person, you'd do the same thing. Don't just throw yourself away, but see all the value that you have within. Bill, it was a great show tonight.
It was a wonderful show. I mean, my goodness. It's for once, I'm speechless. Kind of
wow.
Know what to say.
This is awesome.
I know, right?
I'll have to take you to Quiznos later.
Thank you. Yes, please do so.
I'll get you a speechless sandwich then. I can't believe it.
Perfect.
No, but be your best friend and understand that care, love, and understanding always are better and more powerful than judgment, labels, and expectations ever could be. So stay tuned, because we have a great show for you tomorrow night, and Perspectives with me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in 3 shakes.